Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to what is typically named the one-on-one Inside Lacrosse Podcast. John Gelati here. This week we will be joined by two guests, two very special guests, both Towaratan Trophy winners and national champions, to talk about the storied Johns Hopkins and Virginia rivalry in advance of Saturday's Konica Minolta face-off classic matchup at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. Hopkins and UVA will play each other at 4:30 on Saturday after the Colgate-Navy game at 2 o'clock. Again, the Konica Minolta face-off classic, faceoffclassic.com for tickets. An Inside Lacrosse experience we're excited about, and we wanted to bring in these guys to kind of talk about this rivalry, two legendary games in the series between Hopkins and Virginia. First off, the 2003 NCAA final between Hopkins and Virginia, won at the same stadium. The first time the Final Four was in Baltimore at the then-named Raven Stadium. And a legendary game. Tillman Johnson was on fire all weekend in the mud. Fertilizer put down on Monday to kind of mitigate that. It was cold. It was a huge crowd. First time in an NFL stadium. And it was a pretty amazing game. Amazing performance from Tillman all weekend, but we have Chris Rutelli talking about that game. He was a captain and ended up winning the Towaratan Trophy a couple days later. First up, however, is Kyle Harrison to talk about the 2005 NCAA semifinal between Hopkins and Virginia, another legendary game in the NCAA playoff annals, halted by lightning. That lightning bolt and 46-minute delay ended a four-goal run by Virginia that kind of totally changed that game and put them back in it, but Hopkins was able to kind of weather that storm literally and figuratively and come back and ended up tying the game with 1.4 seconds left on a stunning goal by Jake Byrne to set up the overtime heroics by Benson Irwin, who scored on a fast break, did the Dirty Bird celebration afterward. Amazing play, amazing game, and set up Johns Hopkins' first national title since 1987, a game that they won over Duke on Monday, Memorial Day. Similarly to Chris Rutelli, Kyle Harrison won the Towaratan a few days later, and as a senior, celebrated a championship. Kyle was nice enough to come on and talk about that game, and kind of some amazing circumstances and how injured he was that week. Didn't practice at all, had gotten hurt on Monday, and didn't practice again until Friday. So a lot going on behind the scenes of that one, and an amazing game with the lightning delay and the overtime and everything else. So we are glad to welcome in Kyle Harrison, and he will be joining us right now. We are welcomed in now by Kyle Harrison, coming out of California, LXM Pro, STX, and most relevant to this conversation, a Johns Hopkins All-American, one of the best players to ever come through Hopkins, Towaratan winner in 2005, and a key player in that legendary 2005 NCAA semifinal game between Johns Hopkins and Virginia. Thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. Thanks for having me. Just out here in California. And just actually getting out of a meeting with all the LXM Pro guys. So, just out here enjoying it.
Fabulous. Well, I was at that game, obviously, in 2005, and as were you, as a senior midfielder for Johns Hopkins. Let's kind of just start off. You know, that was the last of six meetings, six times you played against Virginia in college, and all, I think five out of the six were decided by two goals or less. So, why don't we just kind of start off overall and just kind of just give your thoughts on that rivalry and how intense that it was for you and still is for both programs.
Yeah, well, you know, I think when you get to Hopkins, there's it's an interesting dynamic because we don't really play in a conference, you know. So I think, you know, some of the schools, like ACC schools, for example, you have this huge rivalry with the other ACC schools, and you're always really focused on those games. But for us, it was always, you know, Virginia and Syracuse were the big ones that we circled on the calendar. And, you know, the rivalry for 4 years there, it was a lot of fun. You know, unfortunately, I never won a game down in Charlottesville. We lost there my freshman year, and then we lost in overtime my junior year down there. So always a tough place to go down and play, and clearly they're very well coached and always have talented players, so it's always almost circling on the calendar, that's for sure.
Well, let's kind of spring forward to that 05 game. You know, just start with the delay. You know, Virginia comes back, scores three in a row to kind of make to totally change that game. And all of a sudden there's that lightning delay. You know, they kind of halted their momentum. What were things like in that locker room during that lightning delay?
Yeah, you know, so that team, that was crazy because that team, we had been through so many one-goal games and overtime situations that, honestly, we really weren't panicking. And for us, it was only a matter of time with the type of players Virginia had at that point. You know, I think we were up, you know, 3 or 4 goals at one point. And, you know, with Dixon and Ward and Christmas and all those guys, it was just a matter of time before they got going a little bit. So, fortunately for us, that rain delay came through and kind of, you know, halted their momentum a little bit, gave us a chance to go in the locker room, get ourselves together, and to come back out and see if we could win that thing.
Yeah, so that 46-minute delay ultimately is what it was for Lightning in Philadelphia. It stopped a 4-goal Virginia run. What did you guys talk about in that locker room? What was kind of it's got to be one of the more odd experiences in, you know, in sports to be playing in a, you know, NCAA Final Four and have a 45-minute delay all of a sudden after a 4-goal run from your opponent makes a game out of it. What was the atmosphere like in that locker room?
Honestly, man, it wasn't, no one was panicking. As I said, you know, we have great coaches, and as I said, we had been in a lot of overtime situations, a lot of one-goal situations already that year, and especially with that senior class. You know, our whole career at Hopkins, we were in tons of one-goal and overtime games, so we were relatively comfortable with the situation. And with 45 minutes in there, you know, we had a lot of guys that were banged up, too. I know I had a back issue and a hamstring issue, so I was just sitting there with, you know, heat and stem and just making sure that our body is going to be prepared to head back out there and finish out the game. But overall, man, the morale in the locker room was good. You know, I know Greg Raymond gave a great speech. You know, he was one of the captains of our team and one of the leaders of that team without a doubt. And he gave a great speech about staying the course and doing everybody just doing their job. And I feel like when we came out of that locker room, again, there was no sort of panic. It was, let's go back out here and get a lead back and see if we can get out of here and head into Monday.
Yeah, nice little prelude to now Coach Raymond, assistant coach Raymond at Princeton, one of the top rising assistant coaches, I think, in D1 right now. But you mentioned your back, and we kind of all found out a little, you know, maybe after the fact how really banged up you were and how close you were to not playing in those games.
Yeah.
I mean, how bad was that, and looking back now, and how tough was that to play through that back injury?
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. It was Monday before the Final Four. We were practicing at Raven Stadium, and we already had a bunch of guys out. If I remember, you know, Rook had just come back, you know, from an ACL. He had had that earlier in the year, so he was sitting out. I feel like Jake Byrne had an ankle. Kyle Berry was out for a little bit, and I feel like Tizer might have been out as well. So we had a lot of guys that weren't practicing that day in general, and I just went out in the field, and I guess maybe I hadn't stretched as well as I probably should have. And, you know, it was almost like a walkthrough day. And I went to make a short move and just collapsed and couldn't pop up. So, you know, we headed to the hospital, got it taken care of. And so for that whole week, I didn't practice. I honestly didn't even leave the training room or my house. And then, you know, going into, yeah, I think we had graduation on that Thursday, which was absolutely miserable, sitting in one of those chairs for a couple hours during graduation, but, one of those things you gotta do. So I got through that. And then, Friday, that was the first time I gave it a shot. Friday afternoon, we had our walkthrough. That was my first time, putting on equipment, since Monday and actually dodging and shooting and those types of things. And I was able to get through it. And so made the call that, I mean, that was my last chances to wear a, Hopkins jersey. And there was, I'm not sure anything would have kept me off the field, so it was really a no-brainer, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, amazing performance to kind of fight through that. So I guess going, you know, in talking about that Virginia game, you guys come out of the break, and you know, Matt Ward ends up taking, you know, giving Virginia the lead pretty late, and then, you know, Jake Byrne comes back, scores with 1.4 seconds left from Pizer to tie it, send it in overtime, one of the crazier finishes ever. Can you kind of take us through that play and how that got you guys to overtime?
Yeah. Well, you know, Greg, you know, Pizer was an amazing face-off man, and he was just, he had such a great move off the whistle, getting that little jam laser, popping the ball out quickly, and he matched up really well with Jack Sevillier, their face-off guy. So, you know, when I was on the wing and Greg popped that thing out pretty clean. I mean, if you watch the film, it's pretty remarkable to see how quickly he does that move and gets the ball out. And he missed the initial scoop, which actually, I think, got Jack out of position. And he was able to pick up the ball and push transition. You know, like I said, I was hanging out in the wing. Stephen Holmes was out there with me. And there was a perfect passing lane to down to Jake Byrne. Jake caught it right-handed. you know, sort of had the presence of mind to switch to his left hand, which kind of kept him away from the defender and put that thing, if I remember correctly, low and away. And it was an incredible play by Jake, and honestly, an even more incredible play by GP, how quickly he pulled that ball out and how quickly he got down the field and made the right decision with the ball.
Yeah, amazing, amazing play. And you just mentioned some pretty big time names in the lacrosse world involved in that play. Can you take us into the huddle, if you remember at overtime, you know, before overtime, you guys, I mean, I can't even imagine the emotions that, you know, come with scoring in that kind of a last second situation to take the game into overtime.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, that team, man, it was pretty special how comfortable, everyone was in overtime or one goal type situations, because we had been in so many of them. You know, we went out to Syracuse earlier that year, and I think we actually went down by 7. It was either 7 or 6. We went down 7-1 in the first quarter. We clawed back into that thing, and then Greg Pizer stuck one in overtime to win it for us. You know, we won against Navy in overtime that year. You know, we had a couple other one goal games. So that group was just very comfortable in that situation. So, you know, we came into the huddle, and, you know, Coach Petro, you know, gave us what he wanted us to do, you know, scheme-wise in the defensive end. Coach T talked through quickly offensively what we get into if we came out clean with a face-off, and if we didn't, we call a timeout and get into something. But it was just honestly very business-like, very, you know, we've been here before, let's get out here and let's do the right thing.
Nice. And then, you know, the obviously that last play, you know, you grew up with Benson Irwin playing at Friends in Baltimore, and you progressed together.
Yep.
at Hopkins. What did you see on that play and that ultimately won you guys the game and got you to the final against Virginia?
Man, that play was awesome. That play was awesome because, again, it was just everybody doing their job. You know, Kyle Dixon, if I remember correctly, took a shot on the run, high to high. Jesse ate it up. It gave up a rebound that I think Garvey picked up the ground ball, mm-hmm. and dropped it off to Paulie. Paul started pushing transition, and Benson, just like he did on every other, you know, shift he ever had at Hopkins, was just, you know, busting butt down the field, trying to make sure he got into play and push transition if he had an opportunity. And, you know, Paul pushed it. They came to Paul, and they dropped it off to Benson, who was by himself in the middle of the field. And he took that same sidearm bounce shot I've been watching since second grade. Unfortunately, it went in, but he deserved it, man. Benson was the heart and soul of that team, and he was one of the leaders of the team, and I was so excited and proud of him for scoring that goal.
Another play that you mentioned, you know, half a dozen multiple All-Americans on. Did you have any question that he was going to take that shot? I mean, I think it seemed like Virginia questioned that, but what about you? I mean, do you think he was going to pass
it
off? No, take it.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely. The second he caught that thing, I knew he was shooting it. I knew it was going to be some sort of awkward bounce shot, without a doubt. I've watched it many, many times. The funny part, if you watch the film of that game on that play where Jake Burns scores, Benson, I feel like Benson was in on the play, and he was on the crease. I think he had cut, and he had the stick in his left hand. It was just absolutely hilarious because, you know, he had no interest and catching that thing left-handed and shooting it. But because it was the right thing to do, he put it in his left hand because it was on the left side of the field. But that was funny. But there was no doubt in my mind that when he caught that thing, he was shooting it.
Now we got to also cover that celebration there. The Dirty Bird that Benson pulled out is, you know, pretty legendary, I think, in the lacrosse world. Was that planned, or where did that come from?
Honestly, man, we were sitting in my room earlier in the week, and he said he was going to make some sort of big play, and that's what he was planning on doing afterwards. I don't think he was, you know, we weren't thinking he was going to score the game-winning goal in overtime in the Final Four game, but he said he was going to do something, and that was going to be a celebration that came with it. And if you can see when he scores a goal, he scores it, and I'm pretty sure he's screaming, he's excited, but then there's that split second where he remembered he said he was going to do it, and then he does it. So it's pretty funny to watch the video, but I've got a big picture of that in my house of him doing that. And again, man, that's one of my fondest lacrosse memories, watching him catch that ball and finish it and sending us to the national championship game. I'll never forget it.
Nice. Well, yeah, congrats. That was a pretty amazing, amazing experience. And just, what did it mean, you know, for you to win that title? I mean, a huge one for the program, I know, but also for you personally, you know, being a senior and going out that way, you know, ended up winning the Tourton a few days later, but just kind of reflect back on that experience and what that whole thing was like for you.
It was surreal, man. I mean, honestly, you know, any athlete, you know, you dream of winning the national championship in your last game. And, you know, for that senior class, that was such a special group of guys that we were able to go, you know, 16-0 in that senior year and win the national championship. And, you know, we got so much credit for that championship, but there were so many guys that came before us that taught us the right thing, the right way to do things, from the Corey Harnes, Adam Donegers, Bobby Benson, all those guys. Connor Ford, Kevin Boland, you know, I could sit here and list them all off, but those guys were very instrumental in teaching us the right way to play and the right way to work. And so when we were able to win that national championship, man, it just felt so good, and it felt like we all did it together. And it was so great to be able to come out of that stadium and celebrate with all those guys that were there. And you could tell they felt like they were, you know, it was their championship as well, which it absolutely was. So it was just an amazing time, man.
Nice. Well, yeah, congrats again. And let's just kind of spin forward to the present. Kind of give us an update on LXM and what's next for you guys.
Yeah, man, things are good. We're just getting ready to gear things up. You know, as you know, a lot of our guys coach high school, they coach college. And so our season will start on June 1st. We'll be back out here in Orange County to start it off. And then I think the following event will be June 22nd, I want to say. Somewhere in that weekend, June 22nd or 23rd, which is in Coronado Island, which is going to be exciting. But, you know, we're going to go from June straight through to January. And, you know, as of right now, there's 13 events scheduled, potentially looking to add two more. And we're just excited, man. You know, we're excited to continue growing this thing, continue growing the sport, continue adding more talent, new venues, better sponsors, the whole deal. So I'm just really excited, and I'm pumped about, you know, STX. I know we've got a couple additions, you know, adding Defco to the mix is going to be fun. I was always a fan of his game. Didn't like him playing for Syracuse, but I clearly understand why he went there. You know, and I'm excited to finally play on a team with him. He's a really talented player. I think he'll bring a lot to the table. So we're just pumped to get out there and start playing, man.
Nice. Well, yeah, looking forward to seeing the schedule and following along with the progress of LXM Pro. You mentioned STX. What's kind of going on? What's the next step with your line? I've kind of seen some stuff teased here and there, but what's kind of the next step there?
I'm excited. We are, you know, we just did the photo shoot a few weeks back down in Naples, Florida, which I was really excited about. We got a lot of great content. You know, the equipment lot's done. We're done the shaft, the gloves, the arm pads, arm guards, shoulder pads, the new head. The whole thing's done, and we're looking to release the head and the shaft potentially around the Final Four, which would be really exciting. We'll see how that goes, and then the rest of the equipment will come out in the fall. But honest man, it's certainly my best line yet. I'm very proud of the product, and I hope people like it.
Nice. Well, yeah, looking forward to seeing the finished product. And then, and last thing, I know you mentioned high school coaches. You're one of those out in California. Kind of talk about the program and what you're doing and how you guys are looking.
Yeah, well, we're looking solid, man. You know, my younger cousin, Max Davis, went to UMBC, also plays on the LXM Pro Tour. We coach out here at J. Sarah Catholic in Orange County. You know, we've had a decent start to the season. Things start a little earlier out here. I guess we started in mid-February, I want to say. So we're currently 4-2. You know, as a coach, this is my first time. Max and I were just talking about it a couple days ago. Two of our top players are hurt. And not like, you know, hurt where they still play, like they're hurt. They're out for the next 5 weeks. And so it's been an interesting dynamic figuring out, you know, how do you fill in there? What do you change scheme wise? And so that's certainly been the biggest coaching challenge we've had this year. But, you know, we're excited. The kids are playing very hard. It's just a matter of, you know, making sure the right personnel is on the field and figuring out, you know, how to use guys' best assets, all those things that, you know, we've clearly been doing as players for a while, but as coaches, we're still learning. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, as I said, we're 4-2 and we got two big games this week. So we'll see how those go.
Nice. Well, it sounds exciting. Always good to see, you know, young players like, ex college stars like you coaching high school and coaching youth and kind of giving back, especially in non-traditional areas. So great that you guys are doing that. Question that I ask everybody, you know, we have a lot of young listeners on the podcast. Any tips for, you know, rising kids, you know, drills they can do, advice that you can kind of impart to young kids trying to get better in lacrosse?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could talk for hours about that, but if we're looking for just one thing, You know, you don't want to sound like a broken record. The clearly wall ball is an important thing. And making sure you're constantly developing your stick skills. You know, for me, I was a guy that I got to college, and that's when I really started playing wall ball, like nonstop and, you know, in the Hopkins gym. But I wish, you know, for the 6-7 years before that, that somebody would have forced me to do it and forced me to play wall ball 30 to 40 minutes a day. And I think, you know, my stick skills as a result would have been a lot better in college, than they were. You know, I was fortunate enough to play with guys like Connor Ford, Kevin Boland, Kyle Berry. These guys have just had absolutely ridiculous stick skills. It's because when they were younger, you know, they had their stick in their hand all the time. They played wall ball. They were constantly shooting, constantly just doing things with, you know, with their lacrosse stick. So, you know, and I listen to Mike Pyle talk all the time at his clinics and at his demos, and he just talks about how he carried a stick everywhere he went. He's always playing wall ball at the bus station, all those different things. And, again, I know it sounds like a broken record because everyone says it, your coaches, your parents, you know, every pro says it. But, honestly, that's really what differentiates folks. You look at the college game today, these guys' stick skills are ridiculous. And the way the ball whips around, you know, we were watching the Denver-Notre Dame game yesterday, and the ball, the way the Denver man-up moves the ball, like, it's absolutely ridiculous. There's just how quickly the ball is in and out of their stick and how smooth the whole thing is. So, again, there are tons of things I'd say they could work on, but the most important one would without a doubt have to be stick work and developing that every day.
Nice, nice. Well, hopefully kids will take that advice and run with it and get better. But, yeah, I agree. I watched Denver in practice on Friday before the Mile High Classic and was impressed then and, you know, even more impressed on Saturday and at the Mile High Classic. So, good talking to you, man. Always a pleasure. And, thanks for, giving us a little bit more insight into the, 2005 Johns Hopkins Virginia game in the NCAA semifinal. But best of luck to you and, thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it, man. We'll catch you up.
We are joined now by Chris Rotelli from out on the West Coast in the San Francisco area. Chris was a 2003 Tuwharton Trophy winner, captain at Virginia that year, national champion, now with Cascade and Maverick Lacrosse, as well as Advanced Lacrosse, his personal team and camp business out there. How's things going, man?
Good, John. Happy to talk to you. Always fun to reminisce that 2003 year.
Yeah, nice. Well, we'll get right into it. I was at that game, and, you know, it was a pretty amazing game. Well, let's kind of start off with the atmosphere and just kind of the venue. I mean, at the time, that was the first NFL stadium experience for the Final Four, and I'm imagining for really any lacrosse player. What was it like, you know, playing in such a big venue in front of what was then a record-setting crowd?
I remember it. It definitely kind of took you back. You know, I think back to our walk around on the, in the stadium that Friday. And that was kind of the first time you walked out and be like, man, this is huge. You know, this is bigger than any place we've certainly ever played, and kind of imagine it with people in there. And then, you know, but what was the big variable that weekend was the weather. You know, it had rained so much. So, that Friday when we went around for the shoot around on the field, I remember running out there and going to do like a little dodge and a shot and just slipping right away. And it was apparent kind of from the start that the field would be an issue. But, you know, when the games started, you know, on the Final Four and then of course on the championship day, you know, it just, all that stuff kind of blocked out. Something about so many people being in the stadium, they all kind of turn into one. It's like a bunch of white noise. You know, it's so many people, but you don't really see any of them. It's just really loud. And one thing I remember more, you know, specifically in the championship game, early on in the game, I remember it being so loud, so many people, and there's this one ground ball early in the game, and I remember running through a group of people, picking up the ground ball, And literally thinking in my head, man, that was the best ground ball I've ever grabbed. Saying to myself, I don't think I've ever been this focused. And it was something about so many people and on that stage was just extremely dialed in. And I think, you know, I think our whole team was. And it was kind of a magical thing, but certainly a level of focus that comes from that grand of a stage. And it was a really cool thing.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked to Dom Starzha a bunch. You know, he's one of the many coaches who values the regular season experience of playing in those stadiums now that that opportunity exists, playing in our Face-Off Classic event, you know, other events like that, that it's such a different experience for the players that they need to, even now, go through that at least once during the regular season to adjust to a gigantic arena, you know, for the Final Four and kind of prepare them for that. I mean, is it an adjustment? Like, I guess just on, from an on the field perspective, is it different shooting, on a goal when the backdrop is that much bigger than normal?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, at least it wasn't for me as a senior, you know, I mean, all that stuff kind of blocked it all out. And so, you're just sort of on the field. But I think back to when I was a freshman and playing in the Final Four for the first time, that did kind of have an effect where it's that sort of, whoa, this is crazy. And you're just sort of happy to be there in a way. You know, you grew up as a fan in these big stadiums. And that was when the Final Four was at Bird Stadium. So I think that, you know, there's some parallel there. But I think Dom's right, you know, getting those jitters out in the regular season would definitely make a difference. And so it probably helps those teams a lot. We didn't have a regular season game that big. You know, that year specifically though, 2003, we played Hopkins in the regular season, which is what, you know, this game is now. But that was at Homewood, and Homewood was packed. And we actually lost that game. And, probably had a lot to do with how we played them in the final game as well.
Yeah. I mean, you lost that game, and then you lost the next one to Maryland and had a chance to avenge both of those losses in the Final Four, which is a pretty amazing opportunity. What was the difference for you guys in being able to reverse those two regular season results in the Final Four?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. And in both cases, I know that we didn't feel we played our best lacrosse. I guess Hopkins was the first loss of the season for us, and then we lost to Maryland the next game. I don't think we thought we played great in either game, specifically against Hopkins at Homewood. We lost by a goal, and, you know, nobody really had their best game. And so we saw that as an opportunity. We felt we were the better team. And so this was an amazing opportunity to go out there and get a second chance to prove that. I think we were on the underdog in the 0-3 championship game. And, you know, I think the whole stadium was rooting for Hopkins, which was kind of cool too. You know, you could hear it. You know, I remember reading the Baltimore Sun that weekend, and all Baltimore was talking about was Johns Hopkins. And, you know, and we played another Maryland team. We played Maryland in the semis. It's kind of, so I feel like we were definitely sort of underdogs, or at least not the favorite in that stadium in both cases. And again, I think we saw that as an opportunity. We liked it. You know, it's great playing when everybody's rooting against you. It's something kind of motivating about that. And I think that played into it in that game as well.
Nice. Now, the big thing that most people probably remember from that game, other than the field and just the experience, was probably Tillman Johnson's, two games in goal. He was the most outstanding player and, you know, had a ton of saves on Saturday and then less saves on Monday, but very important ones, if I remember correctly. Just kind of talk about him. Obviously, he had a great year. Remember, he was actually not a Twerton finalist that year. But
right.
What was what do you remember from watching him and seeing him play and practice over that weekend at the Final Four?
Yeah, well, you know, we saw Tillman play like that a lot over our time at Virginia. I mean, he's kind of always like that, but, you know, it's impossible to play that way all the time, but he is that good. So it wasn't surprising to see him play that well, but at the same time, it was like, it's kind of awe-inspiring. You know, you never see the saves he was making were just, you know, you just don't make those saves. I remember a couple in the Maryland game and one against Bobby Benson in the final specifically, where it just, the ball was in the back of the net and he would just come and not only did he make the save, but he like caught it, you know, he just like controlled the rebound too. So, To see him stand on his head, it was almost like, you know, wow, we're definitely not losing now. You know, just when your goalie's that dialed in. And, you know, we went up 5-0 against Hopkins, too. A lot of people don't think remember that, but we came out of the gates firing. We went up 5-0 right away, and they actually went into a zone. So the game, I remember the game really changing at that point where, you know, we just sort of sat on the ball a lot because they dropped into a zone down 5-0, and we were content to sort of, yeah, we'll just hold the ball if they don't want to come get it. And so the game sort of changed, but, slowing the game like that actually probably helped them in the end of the day because they were able to get a goal here and there, and then, you know, we're not going the goal and trying to score as much as we were. So it did sort of get closer, and right around the time when the game could have turned around completely, you know, Tillman just took it right away from them. You know, they had a couple doorstep opportunities where he made saves, and you almost could see the Hopkins guys is sort of like, you know, their shoulders deflate a little bit. It was just, you know, and it worked the other way for us. You see a goalie playing that well, it's that much more uplifting. So, I mean, Tillman's the man, and I can't, you know, think of a better performance of a college goalie really ever. You might know better, but that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few games that I can remember exactly what you just said in terms of the other team shooters. You could visibly see them just slump their shoulders and just be frustrated, and like very few that I can remember, and that's definitely one of them. That when you said that, it stood out in my head, like, oh yeah, I remember that specifically. When you could just tell that the shots were getting forced, you know, that Tillman got in those guys' heads, you know, that was pretty obvious. So, you know, amazing for him to do that on that stage. Now just kind of reflect back on that season. I'm just looking at the roster again. I forgot how crazy that roster was when you look at, you know, the senior class, you know, with you and AJ Shannon and Trey Whitty and those kinds of guys. And then you go all the way down and there are huge stars in every class down to John Christmas as a sophomore. And then the freshman class was pretty absurd with Kyle Dixon and Matt Poske and Matt Ward. So Culver, those guys. So, a pretty diverse roster for you guys. What was the key to you guys, I mean, being so good that year and kind of building that chemistry right away?
Yeah, it was a great group of guys. And I think a big thing that sort of defined the team was what happened a year prior. You know, we lost to Syracuse in double overtime in the semifinals in the Final Four. And it was a game we felt like we kind of had won. We were up a goal, and they end up, you know, it's actually the game that sort of changed the rule in lacrosse. That 2002 semifinal game, we were up by a goal. We clear the ball. I think I cleared the ball, ran it into the box, and I throw it to our teammate Brendan Moeller, who, you know, catches it, and we're just going to rag the ball with 30 seconds to go. And he takes a step right on that dotted line, which used to determine the box, and they blow the whistle. And they called us for going out of the box in under 2 minutes with up a goal. And Syracuse goes down. They score a goal to tie it with 8 seconds to go. They end up beating us in double overtime. And I think that was the last time they took that dotted line out of the box after that game. But anyway, so that was a really tough loss. And yeah, one of the hardest I've ever had to deal with. And it was the same for everybody on that team. And so from that day on, I think there was this focus and this determination for everybody else coming back, especially the senior class, that said, you know, we're winning it next year. And, you know, there's nothing anybody can do about it. And so we went out, and what happened to that team started over the course of the offseason, where I think we really just trained and worked harder than we'd ever worked before, than we thought you could possibly work. You know, it was that invisible competition that you have with your competitors, you know, the guys at Hopkins or Maryland or wherever else, where you just, you know, you're shooting balls in the backyard and you're going to shoot 10 more because you know that guy and Hopkins didn't just do that. And it was just that crazy competitive edge and focus that really started to find that team all the way back in the summer and certainly in the fall when we got back to school. But you know, it kind of carried us through, and I think it started to trickle down to where, you know, the guys like Matt Ward and Poske and, you know, Johnny and others below us they kind of recognized, I think, that we were, you know, this senior class wanted it. And there's, you know, we should all work that hard. And it as the year went on, you know, everybody was rowing in the same direction. And, you know, we faced that bit of adversity midway through the season with losing to Hopkins and then Maryland. And, you know, it's just kind of, you know, let's figure this out. And so to have that chance to go put all that work and determination into beating the only teams that beat us all year in the Final Four was amazing. It was just such a great opportunity and unlike what most teams will get a chance to do. So I think everybody from, you know, the freshman all the way up really rides to the occasion. But I would say it started, you know, a full year prior when we had that tough loss.
Was there any sort of, like, meeting or, you know, change after that second loss in road to Maryland? I mean, did you guys change anything or do anything differently as almost like a wake-up call of, wow, you know, we got to do something different here? Or was it just kind of more of a gradual change in mindset and coming together?
Well, I think the mindset was the same, but, you know, we played it's a really tough schedule that you play at Virginia, so it's so hard to bring your best to every game. I think it was just a little bit of a slump where, I mean, as simple as it sounds, we just weren't playing our best. So it was just getting back to playing as well as we could play. You know, I'm trying to think, the biggest, like, yeah, there were a lot of meetings, you know, a lot of people talking and some very serious practices, but, you know, nothing that stands out strategically different. You know, the biggest difference that we went into the Final Four weekend with was a really great move by Dom and Mark Mann, who, the way we played Hopkins, and it's not how we played them the year prior, but we actually put the poles up in the midfield. So we covered Kyle and Adam Doniger with poles and we put the short sticks. We shorted Peter Lesser. And so we put a short stick defenseman on one of their attackmen. And that was actually a really big difference. And most, in 03, you didn't see that a lot where you put both poles up top, I don't think. I think you see it more now with much more skilled and better midfielders. So that was a big, like, strategic difference, in that game that I think helped keep those two amazing players in check. You know, Kyle were as good as anybody. And then, you know, controlling Kyle in the faceoff X was another tough task. And we had Jack DeVilliers actually did a great job for us that game as well. You know, but I don't, you know, there wasn't any real cute, you know, there wasn't any real big, like, meeting after those games. It's almost the kind of thing, John, where not a whole lot needed to be said, right? At the end of the day, it was like, we need to win, so next time let's go win. And, you know, you just kind of figure out a way to do it.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense. Well, an appropriate transition maybe into your current role as a coach and leader of your advanced lacrosse program. What do you just kind of give us the scope of that? I know you guys had a nice win down at one of the adrenaline tournaments earlier this year. What's kind of the lay of the land there, and how are things going?
Well, it's going great. Thanks. You know, so the advanced program is designed to help players kind of get to the stage we're just describing. So it's, you know, we put it together with myself and a bunch of, you know, Joe Thompson and Johnny Christmas and Todd Fiella and Chris Clements, a bunch of other former UVA guys as coaches and some, you know, Roy Wang, a bunch of really great guys out here who are coaching the kids. But it's all about helping them become better players and better people. And ultimately, you know, the kids that we're coaching they want to get to the Final Four. Well, you hear me still talk about it. It's just such a, you know, as a kid, I grew up wanting to play. I went to the Final Four and I just wanted to get there one day. That's why I wanted to play college lacrosse. And, you know, so to have a chance to help younger kids get there is extremely rewarding. And that's why we do it. And so it's been going really well. We've got, you know, teams of kids per grade that are really motivated players that want to get there at some point. And, you know, we're doing everything we can to help them do it. So it's been awesome, man. I appreciate you asking. We've been enjoying it out here and I think we're doing some good things. Kids are getting a lot better. And, you know, since we started doing travel teams out here in 2011, I think we've had about 25 players commit to play Division I lacrosse just from the Bay Area. So it seems to be working. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's kind of how we measure our success. It's the success of the players we coach. And so we got some kids that have committed to play college lacrosse recently and some others that are sort of just getting there. And, you know, that's kind of how we celebrate our success, by watching the success that they're having or will have. So it's an exciting time.
That's great. Well, congrats on all the success. And, you know, as I said the same thing to Kyle, who was coaching down in SoCal, you know, it's such a huge thing for the game to have ambassadors like you and, you know, former college stars, like, you know, big names in the sport giving back, and especially in non-traditional areas. So good that you're doing all that. And then, I guess last question, you know, you're working for Cascade now, Cascade and Maverick, out on the West Coast. How are things going, and what's next for you guys?
It's going great. You know, Cascade and Maverick have merged together under the ownership of Bauer Performance Sports. And Bauer's a really great, they're a big company, but they're you know, they're product focused. And that, like, you know, their R&D focus of just making best-in-class products is really, you know, trickling down into Maverick. And Cascade has that similar passion for product as well. You know, it's less about marketing than it is about, you know, product. And I think that's a really good place to be. And so, they, you know, both continue to come out with great products, and it's awesome kind of, you know, being their sales rep out here and kind of an ambassador for them in the Northwest, is a really great place to be. The sport here is just growing so fast, and there's so much excitement around it. So for me, it's a really great, it's a privilege to be able to do that. And, you know, but yeah, it's an exciting time for Maverick and Cascade kind of with Bauer, and already seeing some great things and just more and more amazing products coming down the line. So, yeah, it's exciting to see what they keep coming out with.
Absolutely, yeah. We can't wait to see what's next. Well, thank you so much, Chris. You know, great story. Kid from Rhode Island goes to Virginia, wins the National Championship Player of the Year award to Wharton, and is now out in California pushing the game. Probably didn't see that one coming back in your old neighborhood, but.
I did not.
Congrats on all the success. And you recently got engaged as well, so congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, getting married next November 2nd. So
nice.
I'm very happy, man.
Fantastic. Well, glad that you carved out some time for us. Enjoy what's left of the winter out there. And, yeah, thanks again.
All right, thanks, Sean. Yeah, good luck with the event. Talk to you later.
Inside the Cross Podcast.